Hello and welcome to the Potential Psychology Podcast. I'm your host, Ellen Jackson, and it's my mission to share the science of human behaviour in a practical, fun and inspiring way. In each podcast episode, I interview an expert from the fields of psychology, well-being, leadership, parenting or high performance. I pick their brain to uncover what they know about living well. What tips do they have for you and I? And I quiz them about how they apply their expertise in their own life. Join me as we discover simple, science-backed ways to live, learn, flourish, and fulfill your potential. Today's show is for the new and impending parents, and maybe those of us who have several or many years of parenting experience under our belts, but we're looking back at those early days and early years. My guest is Nadine van der Linden, who's a clinical psychologist based in Perth in Western Australia, and she has a special interest in perinatal psychology and parenting. Nadine's the author of Tales from the Parenting Trenches, A Clinical Psychologist Versus Motherhood, which is just an excellent title. And she's here to talk about making the psychological transition to parenthood. Welcome, Nadine.
Thanks, Ellen, for having me on today.
I'm excited to have you here. I'm actually celebrating, my husband and I are celebrating 10 years of parenting this month. Our eldest child just turned 10, so it kind of feels like a good time for me to reflect on a bit of the parenting journey, particularly those early years, which I know for me were not that easy, but we'll get into that. But before we get into that kind of nitty-gritty stuff, can you just tell me, what is perinatal psychology?
So perinatal psychology is talking about that period from conception really through to having a newborn baby and probably the first year, a lot of people would say as well. So it's adjustment to pregnancy and it's adjustment to birth and then adjustment to being a mother. It's a psychological work around that that we do with people. Yeah, so that's in a nutshell. If someone's working in perinatal psychology, those are the time frames and issues that we're dealing with women in particular.
Okay, and when you talk about the adjustment, because this is something that's fascinated me kind of looking back on my own parenting journey, when you talk about that adjustment, what do we mean by that in psychological terms?
So mostly when people are thinking about adjustment to parenting, for example, they think about all the practical jobs they need to do to be a parent, so nappy changing and feeding and that sort of thing. But with adjustment in psychology, we're talking about a life stage. And so obviously becoming a parent is a life stage, a very significant one, and there's a big change in role. So we're really talking about that role change from being a non-parent to a parent. And some people, you know, even going from a child to a teen is an adjustment as well, and a teen to an adult. But with parenting, there is a lot of adjustment that needs to go on in terms of how you think of yourself, how you get to know your baby, how you deal with the changes in your body, those sorts of things. So it's those transitions that you're making there. And for mothers in particular, there's quite a big sort of shift in yourself that goes on, and sometimes you're actually quite merged with your baby, and that's completely normal. Our culture really values independence and being separate. But when you first have a baby, you're almost like one and your routines are synced and everything you do is about meeting the needs of that child. And that's probably completely different to how you were if you were a working woman, for example. It's very much about the tasks you need to do each day and your own self-care and your friendships and that sort of thing. So for a lot of people, that's where the adjustment is really hard because they're just not used to being in this kind of self state where to merge with another little being can be quite a confusing feeling, but also wonderful and amazing. And you probably notice it a bit. I know when people I find they start going out without their baby and they'll say things like, oh, it feels really weird not having my wingman with me, because they're just so used to having a baby on them or with them and being focused on that. And suddenly they've got to come into contact with their pre-mother self or the part of you that isn't a mother as such and just have normal conversations which aren't going on in conjunction with caring for an infant. So that's just a little example of how he talked to you about that merging of self stuff. So over that year, the baby and you make these adjustments, and that goes on throughout the course of being a mother. And I mean, if you've got a 10-year-old Ellen, you know how they become very independent by that stage, but sometimes they still want you to do everything for them and be everything for them, and you can find yourself wanting to fix everything for them. So, yeah, we get a lot of time to make all these adjustments, but in the beginning, that very big shift to be responsible for a very helpless newborn is hard. And in a way, we do it in our culture where it's all on mums pretty much, with very little family support. It's just going to be incredibly overwhelming.
Yeah, I found that interesting. You said that, you know, that idea of identity and going, you know, you identify. And I think this was one of the areas for me personally, and I know this resonates with some people that I've spoken to as well, that I don't think I'd really given much thought, or perhaps when I reflect on how perhaps I could have been better prepared for this, if in fact you can be prepared. I mean, I know that everyone says you won't really understand it until you go through it, and I think that's really true. But I don't think I personally had really been exposed to, even as a psychologist, which is nuts, those sorts of psychological things around identity. You know, that one of the things that I actually found really difficult was being so tied to this child. I've been such an independent person. I'd worked for myself. I'd pretty much, you know, my partner and I, even until quite close to the birth of our first baby, had both worked in different cities. We'd gone backwards and forwards. We never even really spent all of our time together as a couple.
Yeah.
So it was a very independent kind of model that I'd come from. And all of a sudden I was A, at home all the time, B, couldn't do anything really that I was used to doing, including go to the bathroom, make myself a cup of tea without that process being interrupted by the needs of somebody else. And I think I found that really, really difficult.
Yeah, I think it's something. I mean, I was working in an obstetric hospital and I was helping people deal with those issues, but nothing could prepare me for how it was going to feel. So I knew about all the issues and I knew that was going to be a problem, but I didn't know really how conflicted and sometimes terrible was going to make me feel. And even simple things like you're talking about, living this very independent lifestyle, but I remember thinking like, right, I want to go to the gym, but then everybody in my life had to know I was going to the gym. And for me that was like, oh, I can't do anything without, I sort of almost lacked any kind of privacy anymore, because if I wanted to do something that didn't involve the baby, then, you know, it was a major event of organising everybody else in my life. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. I think it makes you realise how our lives are not really set up for family particularly well in the Western. But yeah, it's hard. It's really hard. I can relate to those struggles that you mentioned.
Yeah, it's a shift in your thinking. I think that identity term does kind of resonate with me, but it is a shift in your thinking and all of those little things that, and then the flow on effect from that of, you know, perhaps feeling, I don't know if this was your experience, but mine, you know, feeling a bit resentful of the fact that I can't do anything, like as you say, you know, without having to organize it with somebody else in order to kind of free me up to just do something as simple as get my hair cut.
Absolutely. I think if I was to describe my first year of being a mother, resentful would probably be the primary emotional state that I experienced. And I think, you know, when we're starting to talk more about postnatal depression, people feeling angry and resentful is really key to that process. And, you know, we often think of it as being sad and blue. The more we allow women to open up that conversation, what we're hearing is they're really resentful.
And yet it's not something I feel we're allowed to talk about. You're not allowed to say you resent this experience because it's supposed to be a wonderful, joyous, positive experience.
Yes, and imagine if you're using the word anger, Ellen, like that's taking it to a whole level, because A, women are not supposed to be angry, and then angry about having a baby because a baby is, you know, small and vulnerable, and those two concepts are really complicated to put together. But mostly people are not angry with their babies. You know, they love their babies and they're beautiful, but they're kind of angry at society and often their partners, let's be honest, about what happens, because the way things are set up, and it's getting better, I think, but the way things are set up is that a woman's life changes incredibly to become a parent, and a man just keeps doing what they're doing. And when they're at home, it's a bit different, but they're not taking a lot of time off work, they get to maintain social contact, they're not feeding a child, so they're not tied to all those routines. And so this just sets up the scene for a lot of resentment. And I used to spend a lot of time thinking, was it even worth going to university and doing all those things if I was just going to be sat here at home doing nothing, waiting for a child to wake up or doing dishes or whatever, and how unfair it all was. And, I mean, that passes with time. I do want to reassure anyone who's going through that, that those feelings are normal and there are steps that you can take to make them less. But your life will not look like this forever, and as your child becomes more independent, you will get back more of your former self, and you will not lose all your talents and abilities and all the things that your mind worries about. I did read something the other day of someone who's a stay-at-home parent saying they just feel that all their talents and abilities are being wasted by being at home and how unfulfilling it seems for them. But, you know, you still have those abilities. If you can get in touch with those as much as possible during that postnatal period, when there becomes, you know, more space and time for that, I think it really helps you, but you won't lose that completely. And it's hard to see the passage of almost, like, I think years sometimes before you can fully integrate some of that back part.
Yeah, I'm nodding away, not that anyone can see that. I'm nodding away here with everything that you've said because, you know, again, yeah, as I said, you know, we're 10 years into the journey and our youngest is 6.5 and life now is vastly different to my life, say, even 5 years ago with babies and small children. And it does seem unending while you're in it. And then you quickly blink and go, oh, hang on. I do have so much more of that original life back again. But that is a process that you go through. And I kind of feel like you are such a changed person in many ways. As you go through that process, you really, it's hard to describe, but I look back at the pre-children me and just think, wow, she didn't know anything about anything.
I know, it's a dangerous one, Ellen. You'll get people getting upset about that. I mean, but I think...
I know. I mean, it's not that it's nothing about anything. It's really just that I think that, you know, for me, the personal growth, and it's personal growth that's come out of the struggles, really. It's not come out of the positives. I mean, there's many, many positives, but it's come out of the things that have been hard, the things that have been difficult, the things that I've really grappled with, which would probably be no different really to any other of those transformational experiences that a person has in their life. And having children is just one of them.
Yeah, no, I agree. And it's something, it's, I think when you're in the depths of depression or some other kind of illness or stress episode, it's hard to imagine that there will be some sort of silver lining to that. But really, I think it is growth, and sometimes even just connecting to other human suffering and sort of getting a perspective on how hard that is when you're in one of those periods with your mental health and truly understanding it from the trenches rather than kind of just being empathic about, yes, that must be difficult. And so absolutely, I think, well, ultimately, once you become a parent, there is no going back from that, and you've got to find your wings with it. And one of the things you often do is find a lot of purpose and meaning, value, and you may start to look at all relationships and the world quite differently, and that can be really positive. But you do probably need to filter through and talk through those feelings of resentment and being stuck. And for some people, it's the first time in their life they probably don't have any choices. Like, I remember thinking, like, everything else I've done in my life, I could just stop it or quit or do another thing. But when you have a child, it's like, oh, this is it. You know, really, I really
can't opt out.
Played through this and all the hard stuff. Massive learning curve for most people.
Yeah. So, Nadine, what are some of the other, you know, we've talked a bit about this kind of psychological transition and particularly around maybe resentment or even anger. But what are some of the other struggles that, or challenges or just interesting things that you've observed working with particularly women through this period?
Well, I think there's, I guess because I'm working on it in a clinical level too, there are women who start having thoughts about bad things that could happen to their baby. So we call that perinatal OCD. So they're having these obsessive thoughts about either that they could hurt the baby or some harm would come to the baby. So they might think, if I stand on the balcony, I'll drop the baby, or I could put that pillow over my baby's head. And of course, those thoughts are really distressing. And these are generally women who've been non-violent their whole life. So they've never hurt anyone, they don't actually want to hurt their child, but suddenly they're faced with the vulnerability of their baby and the possibilities of how easy it is to hurt a baby comes to the forefront of their mind, and then that creates a huge amount of stress for them. So those thoughts are very difficult to voice, and people worry that their child's going to get taken off them or something like that, and they actually think that they're a bad person for having these thoughts. And that's one of the things, it's really quite fascinating. It's actually really quite easy to fix for a lot of people as well. So I find it quite interesting because OCD in general is kind of hard to treat at times. But with this perinatal OCD, if you explain to people about what your mind's doing and what it's responding to and normalize the experience, people often do really well after one or two sessions of that, and you don't have to do the whole general exposure treatment that you would do. Not always, but yeah. So that's a really fascinating thing. There's also a lot of birth trauma out there, and I think that underpins a lot of difficult adjustments. So I work a lot with that. And the tricky part of that is what is a difficult or a traumatic birth for you may not be medically defined as a traumatic birth. So they will look at it as if you nearly die or if the baby nearly dies. But for a lot of people, if it just doesn't really go to plan, there's a lot of intervention, or you have a general anaesthetic and you don't get to see the birth of your baby, that can create shifts as if you've had a massive trauma as well, and create difficulties bonding with your baby and sort of a lot of rumination or focus on how disappointing your birth was, things like that. Yeah, so that's probably a lot of what I deal with in terms of the perinatal psychology.
And the birth trauma thing for me, and I'm probably again going to open myself up to criticism here, but I find it personally fascinating because I was one of those people who had no plans.
Yeah.
And I mean, no, you know, I wanted it over and done with as painlessly as possible. And to have a healthy, yeah, well, I guess that was it, you know, and to have a healthy baby, you know, my obstetrician always said, you know, the plan was really just to have a healthy mum and a healthy baby at the end. And I guess that is a plan in itself. But because I'd never, and maybe I was just in denial, I think back, I didn't want my brain to go there. I didn't want to think about what this was going to be like, what it was going to involve. It was just like, I'm just going to take it as it comes and see what happens. But I realized that that's not always the case, that a lot of people do have much clearer ideas of how they think a birth could or should go. And then there can be that discrepancy. Would that be right?
Oh, yeah. And I think some people are literally going in with 20 pages of typed out instructions about how they want the birth to go. And that's because they're anxious and they want to think that they can kind of control the experience. And one of the very difficult parts about birth is that you don't really get a say in how your body's going to do it. Your baby can be positioned in a particular way. But it's, for many women, the very first time in their life that they have absolutely no say. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. You know, sometimes it teaches us a lot that we don't have to be in control and things can still go all right. But, yeah, I think, say, for example, with me, like I thought I'd try and do it with hypnobirthing and no pain management, and really my baby just wasn't positioned in a way to allow that to happen. So I needed a lot of intervention to get her out and stuff like that. So it's just difficult, you know, when your body gets a bit damaged by birth as well, and you were thinking you might be able to prevent that by using certain techniques. All of that takes time to get used to, and, you know, you can be quite jealous of other people who have these labours that go really smoothly and they don't need any help afterwards to get used to that. But it's kind of a bit luck of the draw of the way that your body's shaped and how your baby's sitting and what sort of medical complications you get in your pregnancy. So, yeah, I mean, for most people, they sort of hit that second trimester and they think, oh, my goodness, it's got to come out of me, you know, how and the reality of that. And from there it kind of builds, and I guess it probably depends a little bit on your personality, how relaxed you can be about that. But obstetricians do a lot of work and midwives, I think, in trying to help people feel better about something that, you know, they don't know about. And you know, for a lot of people, we don't have a lot of babies these days generally, so you only do it a few times that works. And every single time it seems to be different for people too, so you can kind of think, oh, well, I did that once, but you can't really be guaranteed that the second time will be the same. Some people, that's a good thing because the first time was so bad that they don't really get to repeat that. But for other people, I think you just know that birth is hard. It doesn't matter really which way you do it, whether it's a planned cesarean or a labour. And it's just one of those very big days in your life. Well, I often say you're lucky if it happens in one day, because some people who, especially with labour, seem to go for days. I don't know how like that mentally. But, it's a very big moment of your life.
And I guess that for you, so you were working as a clinical psychology in an obstetrics unit, so specialising in this area. And I can imagine that must have shaped your expectations or perhaps some of your, you would have seen a lot of things that the majority of us don't see that may have shaped some fears or anxieties.
I don't really recommend it, to be honest. I think you're better off having less information about all of that. And, I remember really I found it difficult to feel comfortable about the pregnancies until I got to 27 weeks, because I knew that when babies come before that, it was a really difficult road. And I didn't find pregnancy as enjoyable as maybe some people do, and just sort of trying to really run with it and go with it. And there was also, I just knew way too many difficult birth stories. And strangely, my obstetrician at one point decided to tell me that someone had died at the hospital I worked with. I hadn't even heard that. Probably because they didn't tell me. But, just that most people would just never even think about, that these things can happen. So, it was kind of good, because I knew a lot of stuff and I knew about adjustment and those sorts of things, but also bad because from this general medical point of view, I probably knew too much to enjoy that fully pregnancy.
Yeah. Yeah, because I was just thinking about how even my whether it's my expectations or perhaps the decisions I made were shaped in part by the experiences of the people around me. So like many women, I was having children at the same time that all my friends and my sister and my cousin, everyone around me was also having babies or pregnant or, had young children, and how much of that probably shaped, I had a sister and a sister-in-law who were both pregnant at the same time I was, and both had previous children, whereas this was my first. So having their kind of experiences and their stories, and I know that shaped some of the decisions that I made as I approached the birth and the whole labour process. And I guess that's the same for most people, that you would be shaped by the experiences and your expectations might be shaped, good and bad, and anxieties therefore by what's going on around you.
Yeah, I think that's definitely the case. And I think, I actually had planned to have my children a bit later, but as a part of my role, I saw so many people dealing with infertility in their 30s, between 35 and 40. And so I started to think, well, if I don't get on with this, I know that there's a lot of people say, well, we didn't know that fertility was a problem at 35. But I knew that. So I thought, well, so I ended up having my kids 5 years earlier than I probably would have been ready for professionally, what I was doing.
Yeah.
And that probably played into the other stuff as well. And also just being around all the cute little babies all the time sort of probably pushed that maternal instinct more. And sometimes I would meet, it was a public hospital and there's all sorts of women coming there, and some women would have a lot of children already by my age, and I would say, well, I can't really say I'm not ready for it. I've got four children and they're 27. So it's just in lots of ways it probably shaped some of the decisions I made and how I felt about parenting and birth, but definitely pushed me to do it a lot earlier than I had anticipated.
Interesting, isn't it? I was, and I've had the experience of moving from an inner urban big city environment to a regional environment and quite different communities, I think, in many ways, since having my kids. So for me, I had my first at 35, my second at 38. Yeah. That was very normal. In fact, in my mother's group, there were mums quite a bit older than me having their first child, sort of well into their, early and almost to mid-40s. Yeah. And that was very much the norm because, again, we're shaped often by the environment within which we operate. So didn't think too much about it. And again, most of my friends had been to university. So had spent 10 years establishing their career. That was the norm.
Yeah.
And now moving. And I did have the somewhat disquieting experience of going along. I took my mum to grandparents' day when my eldest was in prep, which is our first year of school here in Victoria. And here's me as a kind of, I suppose I must have been my early 40s. And here's my mom as the grandma. And I was looking around at some of the other families that I'm looking at, some of the other grandmas, and going, I think they're my age. You know, grandmas were in their 40s because mums were in their 20s and this was their five-year-old. So all of those sorts of things they shape your experience and your thoughts about yourself as a parent. And it can be, sometimes I think, oh, what would it have been like to have had my kids 10 years earlier than I did? But it's one of those silly abstract questions, isn't it? You know, it is what it is.
Right. And I think, like, for myself, in some ways, had I waited the 5 years, probably would have helped me with some things in particular. But I was just really probably motivated by the infertility that I saw around me. But, yeah, I think, and what I try, and I'm trying not to say anything that invokes those sort of debates in this podcast, but I think a lot of people feel judgment no matter how they do it. So the people that I see at work under 25 having a baby feel extremely judged, that people think they're too young, they don't have enough money. They go along to their mother's groups, and the women who've been in professional careers are taking their children off to chiropractors and different groups and things, and that they just don't have the finances to do that. And then the women who are over 40 are very sensitive to comments about being too old to have a child. Or I think, you know, in the community I live with, it's like your Sydney community, probably quite normal. Like, it's not many people got
old,
or, you know, it's just most people, like, I think my obstetrician told me most of his clients were between 35 and 40. So that was quite kind of common. But obviously, if you shift communities or you shift where you live, then you'll start getting these different frames of references about what's normal and what's not normal. But, I just think we really, there are some issues around becoming a mum and parenting that are going to be the same across all age groups, and there are some that are going to be different. And really are hoping that we just get a way of being supportive for every woman, like whether you're a teenager or a early 20s or a late 30s and 40s mum. With the advances in technology, I don't really know how far people are going to be able to push their fertility. There's all different issues with whatever age you do it, but we're generally doing the same job, dealing with the same kinds of issues, and we don't probably need to complicate that by making it about who's the right age to do it. But, yeah, it does. With the way that parenting is, we do like to have those battles with each other.
We do, don't we? And it's not just about age, it's about feeding, it's about, I mean, it's about everything. Same. Absolutely everything.
Actually, I do a bit of writing, and then I got surprised recently. I wrote a bit how I thought as a mother of kids in between years that I would start to work more. Like, that was my plan. I was just going to be almost like full time as I went into high school. And then all of a sudden I'm here and I'm exhausted, and they just need, you know, a lot of my time still. And I've decided not to do that. And I might even cut back like half a day a week or something. And people got stuck into me because they felt so challenged by that, because, you know, obviously they were working full time or whatever. And I felt really unsettled because I thought, you know, the working mums, I'm a working mum and now they're having a go at me. But, you know, with writing, you just do push release buttons, and I probably need to remember that people are being judged, and they do feel like people are questioning whether they should even work. You know, so there is a lot out there that we can get caught up in who's the best mum.
I think you're right. I mean, I think the judgment, if that's the right word, that goes on, and a lack of perhaps empathy for the fact that, you know, everyone has challenges, everyone has struggles. We're all kind of part of the same big experience of whether it's parenting or really anything.
Yeah.
And that making those judgments about other people is so unhelpful to them, but also to us.
Yeah.
You know, I think even just that kind of, you're talking then about your own experience of thinking that you were going to parent in one way or combine the parenting working thing in one way, and then discovering that that is not the way it's panning out. I think that's been really interesting. You know, I know for me, I really thought that I would, whether I thought I'd stop work altogether, I really thought I would be this really there every day, engaged parent. especially when the kids were little and we'd do all this stuff together. And I really quickly discovered that actually I don't enjoy that stuff at all. And I discovered that I became a cranky, unpleasant person to be around if I wasn't getting the stimulation or doing the things that my work entailed. And that was a struggle. You know, we're talking about these kind of internal struggles. That was a struggle because that was really changing my thoughts about myself, having to come to some kind of realization that who I thought I was or who I thought I would be was not who I fundamentally was.
Yeah, and that's when I raised, like we talked at the beginning about the adjustment and the identity stuff. Sometimes it's who we are is quite shocking.
It wasn't what I expected.
I think what I tried to say in that article that I got a bit hammered for was it's about being flexible. And for the first time ever, I've been quite surprised that I haven't struggled with not being able to do what I wanted to do or changing my mind about what I wanted to do. Because in the past, you know, not being able to work the hours I wanted or whatever, I would have been quite resentful about that. And maybe that will change, you know, maybe in a couple of years I'll be like, oh, I don't want to put so much of my time into the home life and I want to do some other things, but we'll see. And, you know, the other thing, a caveat I put on that, I am very lucky that I run my own business so I can decide what hours I work and I also earn reasonable money for what I do. So not everybody has the choices that I have.
Yeah, and I think that flexibility, I think, is key, isn't it? Because it's flexibility about how we, not just the practical flexibility about how we perhaps blend, and I think it is a blend, I don't think it's a balance, I think it's a blend, parenting with family, but also flexibility in how we think about ourselves and how we think about other people who are going through these experiences as well, realising that, you know, what we think is right for us may not even be what turns out to be right for us or for our family, and therefore or how could we make a judgment about what should be right for somebody else? You know, it's such a personal thing.
Yeah, that's right. So it's all of these things are big surprises. I often think actually with some of the postnatal depression, it's the people who thought they were going to absolutely love being a mum and love every minute of it that quite often have a very big fall because what it actually involves is quite different to what you see on Instagram or memes or those brief moments that you spent time with mums.
Yeah, I can see how that would start to cause, you know, distress for people. I think even that difference between, well, thinking that you're going to love every moment of it, thinking that it's such a joyous experience, and then discovering that in often cases it's not, or thinking that, you know, you are going to really revel in playgroup and in doing craft, and then discovering that all of that has the consequent mess that you need to clean up, and that's part of your responsibility as well. And where did the time that you had for yourself once upon a time go? Because that seems to have evaporated.
Yes, that's right. So it's kind of just a harsh reality for some people. And so sometimes if you've dreamed of being a mum and you think that's going to be all. I know, I've had women say to me, like, I thought this was going to be my thing because I haven't perhaps excelled in something else or felt the mojo there. And then when it happens again in motherhood, it's like, oh, no, what's left for me if I don't also love this? But maybe what we all need to start thinking about is it's probably the expectations about how we should feel about our lives and where we should be obtaining our satisfaction. You know, there's so much focus on performance and achievement and being the best, and maybe, you know, sometimes I see these little memes about I'm teaching my kids that an ordinary life is okay, and me, I'm like, oh yeah, I hadn't really thought about that. But there can be a lot to be said for just enjoying life and finding things about it that aren't about, you know, excellence and performance and achievement.
Yeah, it kind of comes back to that mindfulness type concept, doesn't it? Just enjoy what it is in the moment without judgment.
Yeah, that's right, and not marking who you are based on certain markers, you know, seeing your value just because of your humanity. So, yeah, it's kind of very contrary to how we would often approach parenting, and it's very focused on in the West, and you might think about competitive job markets and getting your kids to excel in things, and that's how you're a good parent, and there are complications with that as well.
And Nadine, do you have any other tips for, and I know we've talked about the fact that there really is in many ways no ways to prepare, but
I mean, in your area, obviously you are working with women who are about to embark on the journey of parenting, and I say women in particular, but obviously a lot of this stuff applies to men too.
Yeah.
What other tips do you have for people to prepare themselves?
Yeah, the number one, I think, is really talk to your partner about parenting roles and home duties and what their expectations are and how you're going to do that. Because a lot of people go into it, have the baby, and then suddenly realize they've got a partner who has totally different beliefs and expectations about how this is going to be done. And, you know, I don't know if you're seeing it, Ellen, but I see a lot of stuff about people talking about the mental load of parenting and how, yes, they might be sharing domestic tasks, but they're not sharing that emotional load of parenting. And I think that's actually quite typical of Australian life and what's expected. But none of that can be resolved without conversation. So if you're pregnant, please have these discussions now and talk it out now and then make that an ongoing conversation, because that really does help, I think, reduce relationship distress. And you know, we see a lot of separations in the first 2 years of having children. It's because of this stuff, and that people don't have a way to talk about it, and then they start hating each other, but they've never even really openly talked about how it was going to be. Probably do that before you're pregnant, actually, because it's once it's happening. But there is a great book, I don't know if you've heard of Ellie Taylor, Ellen. She's an Australian couples relationships counsellor, and she's written a book called Becoming Us. It's actually massive in America, more than it is here, oddly. And it talks about, you know, all of that stuff of how to make yourself a family when you're used to being a couple. So I highly recommend that book. If you don't know much about babies and you've never been around one, which happens to most of us because of the way we live in Australia, get like a baby developmental stage book so you can know what to expect and what babies generally do, because many of us don't really know, and then we think we're bad parents, but actually the babies are just doing what babies do. And I don't mean one of those how to have a perfect sleep through the night baby. I mean one that actually says between 0 and 3 months your baby will do this week by week, and generally that's for typical developing babies, but it's kind of a helpful guide anyway. And don't kind of go into it thinking you can just add your baby into your life without changing it, and you know, move stuff like we'll just get the baby to work around us, because that just leads to massive disappointment and frustration, because you will need to slow down quite a bit. You will need to make adjustments. You'll probably be staying home at night a lot more than you ever did and not travelling the world for a little while, because it's, you know, babies need a lot of time and routine, and the way you sleep pre-baby won't really allow for that. And have a realistic but flexible plan for your return to work, and sort of get in mind that your baby may not work in with your plan. So, for example, with my first child, I had planned to return 6 months part-time, but my baby wouldn't take bottles, so I couldn't go back to work.
Had other ideas.
I was like, so I've got a baby that can't be fed during the day unless I'm there. But that didn't turn out to be a bad thing. But, yeah, so flexibility around that stuff.
Yeah, I think that's wonderful advice. I think as I kind of reflect back over our experience, especially in those early months and years, I think I could see where expectations of how things should be or how you think they're going to be based on, I don't know, it's certainly not previous experience, the experience of other people around you, or certainly, you know, what you see others doing or what you see perhaps in social media, was possibly one of the biggest causes of challenge. Yeah. Just that gap between what I thought or what we thought might happen and then what actually did happen. I know we were just talking to someone the other day about those early days with the baby and how we seem to have so many friends who had these newborn babies and they just go out to dinner and they just put the baby under the table, yeah, you know, in this, in the little cot. And we had one of those babies that didn't stop screaming. There was no way known that we were going anywhere. You know, if we could get it together enough to order takeaway, we were doing well. And I think that's wonderful advice around just managing those expectations, or trying to be flexible with those expectations. Don't think that there is a way this is going to happen. Be present with what happens as it happens, and know that every single journey is so different.
Yeah, and it won't be like that forever. You know, those fussy temperament babies are kind of interesting, and I do feel sad for people in a way if you get one of those, especially first time around, because they make you feel like you're a terrible parent. I know this because my second child is one of those.
See, I had that first time around and pushed pushed through, got number two, and then just had this joyful experience. I remember my husband and I standing there watching this baby just sleep on the rocker on the floor for he's been asleep for 2 hours. He's still asleep. And we were just amazed at how easy.
We haven't had to do anything.
Yeah, because first time we thought babies were, constantly crying, had to be held all the time, had to be attached to you all the time.
And then this
one that wasn't like that.
Right, and, I think, sometimes we talk about what makes adjustment harder. Well, if you have a baby that has a more fussy temperament, then, of course, that's going to make them a lot more difficult. And some of your friends may not have that sort of baby, and they'll be going, oh, I've got 8 hours sleep and 6 weeks and sleep through it all.
Yeah.
Take it from me, and obviously you've had the two different experiences, and you're exactly the same people, you're the same parents, same household, but these babies are responding completely differently, and it's a lot to do with how they're wired when they come out. And we accept that adults have different personalities, and it doesn't mean your baby's going to be difficult for the rest of their life. When you have a strong-willed child, you are really forced to parent them, so you have to be very creative about the way that you do that, and it's like how to maintain a loving relationship with someone who doesn't make that really easy for you at times. It's kind of a real test of you as a person. And that doesn't, like we were talking about before, about the reward that comes from struggle, like you don't have to get negative about that. You can kind of see this as a growth curve really for yourself.
Yeah, very much. That growth mindset really struck me as you were just talking about that learning how to parent and continue, how that is a continuous journey and a continuous process and being able to look at it instead of I've got to, this child is difficult. It is what can I learn as a parent?
That's right. Well, also it's teaching me a lot about how a person with a very different personality might see the world, because sometimes I'm like, how did my child even arrive to that conclusion or way of reacting to that situation? So it's teaching me a lot. The very deep interpersonal level about how we have different lenses of reacting to the world, even. It doesn't mean they're right or wrong, they're just different between them.
Yeah. It is an ongoing and wonderful, if not sometimes challenging, experience being a parent. Nadine, if people want to find out more about you, I did mention at the beginning that your book, which is called Tales from the Parenting Trenches, A Clinical Psychologist versus Motherhood. Mm-hmm. I will pop a link to that. Yeah. It is available on Amazon, and I'll pop a link to that in the show notes for this episode. But where else can people find out a bit more about you and the work that you do?
Yeah, so you can find me. I've got a Facebook group called Unshakable Calm, and that's for women. It's based around calm and confidence, but a lot of people who join my group are parents trying to work out how to feel less stressed and less frustrated and less overwhelmed as mothers, I have to say. So I run a different video. I'll do a video every week in there about those sorts of topics. Sometimes it's related to parenting. Sometimes it's just general stress management. I also have an associated page with that called Unshakable Calm with Nadine van der Linden, and that's where you see my writing. And I put some relatable sort of memes and funny things through there. Just to kind of mix it up a little bit. And I'm also on Instagram. I'm at Nadine_van der Linden. So with that one, it's a similar sort of thing, but it's probably more focused around emotional well-being and mindfulness concepts. So I try and vary it up so that you can, different people can take what they want from the different feeds. A lot of my clients from my clinic follow along with the Instagram because it's got sort of tips and well-being stuff. So yeah, that's where I'm at.
Wonderful. Well, thank you very much for all of that. I've really enjoyed our conversation today. I hope it's not terrified prospective parents too much and that they do in fact find it helpful.
If we did it and we survived, then everyone else can do it.
Well, that's absolutely true, isn't it?
I really enjoyed the conversation with you as well today, and I really hope that people listening to it find it useful to their journey with parenting and the key concepts of flexibility, taking time to find your way, and it's okay not to know how to do everything all the time. If you've got a clinical psychologist, you're still trying to work out how to parent a strong-willed child, that kind of tells you something.
Wonderful advice and summary. Thank you again for that, Nadine, and people can find out more about you and where you are and some of the tips that you've provided in our show notes.
Yeah, thanks, Ellen.
Thank you so much for sharing my conversation with Nadine van der Linden. I hope that if you are about to embark on the exciting journey of parenthood, that you take heart from two psychologists who are still just muddling their way through it on a daily basis. As always, you'll find the links, tips and resources that Nadine and I mentioned today in the show notes for this episode. Visit potential.com.au/podcast. And while you're there, leave us a message. On the left-hand side of the podcast homepage, you'll see a little note that says, send a voice message. Click or tap on the start recording button below and very quickly and easily leave us a voice message from your phone, tablet or computer. You might like to share a bit about your transition from non-parent to parent. Keep listening because we might just put you on the air in season 3 of the podcast, sharing your voice and your thoughts with the wider potential psychology audience. I'm very excited to hear from you. And I'd also love it if you could rate and review the podcast on iTunes, as that helps to spread the word about our great guests. A couple of people have told me that they're not sure how to leave a review, so we've added some links to helpful tips on the podcast homepage. That's at potential.com.au/podcast. Thank you so much for your support of the show. We've had over 5,000 people download episodes in just 4 short months, which absolutely blows my mind. You are one of those very special people, and I just want to say thank you. I sincerely hope that you have taken away an idea or two that will help you to further fulfill your potential.